It can be a big decision for retail investors to decide how and where to invest their hard-earned cash. After all, their savings are on the line. That's where FINRA's Advertising Regulation Department comes in, overseeing broker-dealer communications to ensure that they are fair, balanced, and not misleading. On this episode, we learn more. Welcome to FINRA Unscripted. From Rockville, I'm your host, Caitlin Kiernan. I'm pleased to be joined today by Amy Sochard, Senior Director of FINRA's Advertising Regulation Group within the Office of General Counsel. Amy, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
So advertisements are everywhere these days. It's not just billboards and commercials. Now it could be displaying in our search. It could be displaying in our social media feed. So when it comes to the financial industry and the broker-dealer industry, what is advertising regulation?
So our department is part of FINRA's investor protection effort. We are in charge of helping broker-dealers comply with the advertising rules. And just in a nutshell, those are designed to ensure that investors get communications from broker-dealers that are fair, they're balanced, they don't have any misleading or false statements or claims.
What is the regulatory rule basis for this regulation?
Sure. So there's FINRA Rule 2210 titled Communications with the Public. It's many pages long. It has some standards for the internal approval and supervision of communications. It also has definitions of different types of communications, which we've kind of streamlined because communications, as you pointed out, are so varied and so ubiquitous at this point. And then it also has the content standards that I mentioned, and actually pages and pages more content standards, but the core of it is the not misleading standard that I mentioned. And then there's also filing requirements where broker-dealers have to file with our department certain communications with the public that may present a greater risk to investors.
So when were these rules developed? Is there a backstory to why they were created?
You know, they've been around a really long time. I think they go back to the late 70s. And NASD then had an interpretation of the board regarding communications, and that was based actually on a New York Stock Exchange standard. But the rules have evolved many, many times over the last 40 years. And for example, we even had rule amendments just back in 2016 that had a significant effect on the rules.
You mentioned that the core is it must not be misleading. Does this apply to all communications? Where's the line for what type of communications the rule applies to?
So the rule defines, as I said, three flavors, if you will. By far the biggest is retail communications. And those are any communication that goes out to more than 25 retail investors. And then there's also institutional communications, which are those communications that go only to institutions like other broker-dealers, registered investment advisors, banks, or individuals who have over $50 million in assets, as well as certain corporations.
So there's the drawing the line in the sophistication level.
Exactly right.
When people think of disclosures, you think of like pharmaceutical ads and how they talk about all the terrible side effects at the end of any drug commercial. Are financial disclosures supposed to be lengthy? What's the FINRA rules around that?
So the rule requires the disclosure to be kind of proportionate to the communication. You only have to balance what you actually say in the ad. And that's an important principle. So if you just say the name of your broker-dealer and that you offer stocks and bonds and mutual funds, and then you would have to say that you're also a member of SIPC because that's required under their rules. But that's simple. You wouldn't have to get into a lot of disclaimer and disclosure. But as you get more specific about an offer of a specific security, then you might have certain rules that kick in. For example, mutual funds and ETF advertisements have a bunch of SEC rules in addition to FINRA rules that they have to comply with. And it's one of the reasons our department works closely with the SEC, with staff, with respect to those types of communications. But if you talk about the value proposition of a specific security, then you may, in fact, need to put some disclosure in your advertisement. But FINRA just recently published some guidance on this topic, Regulatory Notice 1931. And we titled it Disclosure Innovations in Digital Communications. And the idea behind that notice is to say, look, people can use different methods for getting disclosures across. We live in a more sophisticated age in terms of the technology. And if you're in the electronic communication space, there are certain cases where you may be able to do more limited disclosures. And then you may also be able to provide disclosures through other means. For example, there's pop-ups, there's the more or less buttons that people use on their smartphone ads and things like that. So there is some flexibility.
So it's recognizing there's been this shift in the technology available so that disclosures can be different.
Exactly right. And we are seeing some innovative disclosures that firms are using. For example, we'll see information, maybe it's presented in a table in a communication with the public, but then there may be an option to get that same information in narrative form. Right there, the investor can click to see it explained in a different way or even displayed in a different kind of chart instead of the table.
So it's maybe recognizing that different consumers process information differently, so allowing them to tailor it to their own needs.
Exactly right. The idea of people having choice in how the communication appears to them is kind of inherent in the internet when you think about it.
So this reg notice also said that FINRA welcomes the opportunity to consult with members about using alternative design techniques. Can you share any of the ways you've been working or hearing from firms?
So this has really come up a lot in very short types of communications when you think of some social media posts where there might be space limitations in terms of the text that they're allowed to have. And we've worked with firms on what are the really core necessary disclosures instead of just let's have a lot of useless boilerplate in the communication. So that's a conversation that we've had with a number of firms, and we really encourage people to come forward when they're dealing with that. You know, how do I get these disclosures across? Oftentimes, what we find is that there's disclosures that are not required by FINRA rules or SEC rules, and they may just be kind of coming along for the ride and basically clogging up the advertisement. And they're not serving the purpose that they're intended to. So we're happy to try to really talk to the firms about which disclosures are necessary and then effective ways of getting them across. For example, in social media, sometimes there's an image and sometimes information can be put into the image itself. So even though there's only a limited number of characters they can have in the message, the image may have room for some of the disclosure or the necessary information.
So I think it's interesting you mentioned some disclosures coming along for the ride. Can too many disclosures be a bad thing?
Well, our rule actually talks about one of the standards is making sure that disclosures are clear. And we do sometimes see disclosures that are buried in a bunch of extra text. There's the classic issue of they're very small and hard to read. Some of us who are not as young as we were do need to see the text bigger. But there's oftentimes disclosure, as I said, information that's not necessary from a regulatory standpoint. There may be another reason the firm has chosen to put it in there, but it shouldn't distract or detract from the necessary information.
So it shouldn't confuse investors as to what the actual risks are with too much information.
That's quite possible. I mean, I think we all suffer from information overload. And one of the things we said in our regulatory notice is that you may be able to move some of the necessary information into the main body of the text. And if you do that, you may not need as much detail elsewhere in the communication.
That makes sense. When a firm wants to come to you and talk about a new idea they have, how would that process work?
So each firm who's a member of FINRA has an assigned analyst in our department. So that's the place to start. You can call our department. We always have a human being pick up the phone here. So we're at 240-386-4500. And we always have a person picking up the phone during business hours. And they can tell you who your analyst is and connect you to the analyst. And then you can talk to them. And then we have a process if you want to get more insight from more senior folks. You know, there is a hierarchy and people are welcome to bring in the management staff if they're interested in talking to them. We also have a web page, which has a lot of information on it. It has links to all of our regulatory notices. And that is a fairly easy URL. It's just finra.org/advertising. Again, finra.org/advertising will take you to our webpage.
And we'll link to all of those in our show notes and include that phone number in case you missed it. What do you think the benefits are both for FINRA and firms in having this collaborative option available?
Well, I think you've pointed out, you know, the communications methods are changing rapidly. And FINRA has worked very hard to keep the rules up to date as electronic communications first appeared and then became more prevalent as social media became more prevalent and now just kind of digital media has exploded. We have tried to keep up to date. But having conversations with firms is also a great way to understand what's going on because the marketing folks are always plugged in to new developments. They always want to push the envelope and they always want to make sure that their message is getting out using the most up-to-date means possible. So it's very helpful for us regulators to hear what firms are interested in doing and have a conversation about it rather than coming along later and saying, oh, you did it wrong.
And it seems like having well-made disclosures would be in the firm's best interest. If a customer understands the risks, it seems like they're less likely to have a complaint against a product or the firm.
I think it's really important. Marketing is always very excited and pumped up about the product or the service they're offering. It's a requirement of our rules, but it's important from the firm, as you say, for their reputation standpoint, to not overpromise. And that's kind of the core of the rules. Unlike maybe some other industries that in securities advertising, you really do need to make sure you're giving the whole picture, giving a fair presentation.
You mentioned that there's a lot of advertisements that are required to be filed first, and your group reviews those. What are some of the most common issues you encounter?
So just to be clear about the filing requirements, the biggest one by far is for registered investment company securities. So that's your mutual funds, ETFs, variable insurance products, unit investment trusts. Those communications have to come to our department within 10 business days of first use. So I just wanted to be clear about that. There's a few other requirements as well, and you can find them on the webpage. I think the most common types of comments that we give are under those core standards. Either, in our view, the communication doesn't give a balanced presentation of the product, and it may be an absence of risk disclosure. Or recently, we've had a lot of advertisements advertising bank sweep features that firms are able to offer. And we've needed to see more clarity around what's being offered because people are excited about the yields that they're able to offer investors in these accounts, and they're excited about the fact that the money does ultimately get swept into a bank account. But it's very important to be clear that customers are opening brokerage accounts in order to take advantage of these features and that the brokerage accounts are not insured by the FDIC. So that's the kind of thing that we work with firms to make sure that they're accurate, clear, and that they explain what's really happening.
I believe another filing requirement is for first-year firms.
Oh, yes, that's right. It's kind of the training wheels.
So it's the training wheels as they start interacting with customers. But what are some of the common issues for first-year firms as they're getting their feet under them?
So one of the things is clarity around what the firm is or who the firm is, because sometimes firms have names that are a little different, or perhaps they have a parent and they want to trade on the brand of the parent. And that's not unusual, but you have to be clear about the broker-dealer name. That's a very core requirement of the rules so that customers know who they're dealing with, so that down the road, if there's any questions or issues, they know what entity to go to. So I would think clarity around the broker-dealer name is something that we've had to deal with. And then it is unfamiliar the way the advertising rules work. So sometimes we have to really talk through some of the standards that we've been talking about: clarity, accuracy, and balance. and how to get the important information across to investors. So those are some other things that we'll help new member firms with.
So on the exam priorities letter this year, first we have Reg BI, and then second on the list is communications with the public. What's new in that space?
In the communications with the public section of the exam priorities, there was a discussion of the bank sweep features that I mentioned earlier. So that was one area of interest for us. A lot of firms have done really impressive marketing campaigns on that topic. And we've been working with a lot of the firms to make sure that they're in compliance or that they're going to be in compliance going forward. But another area that we've been looking at has been private placement communications that are used with retail investors. Over the past few years, there were some rule changes pursuant to the Jobs Act, and I think there's been a real interest in making private placements more accessible to retail. And that can be a great opportunity, but these securities do involve a high degree of risk because often the companies are rather unproven. They may be new businesses, untried businesses, and we've had to work with the firms on making sure that those communications are fair.
And then what do firms need to keep in mind for 2020 and going for supervision when it comes to digital channels?
So that is the big challenge because, of course, customers like to communicate in the way that they're accustomed. So a lot of folks no longer want to communicate in email. They want to communicate through other venues. And that has been a challenge for firms because not every mobile app that allows for messaging is easy to capture the content. And firms have struggled a bit with finding vendors to capture that content and make that compliant because the biggest challenge is record keeping, getting the content, and then, of course, being able to supervise it once it's in the firm's possession. So the reg notice does talk about the importance of communicating with your reps about what are the allowed channels and what are the disallowed channels, and then making sure that you are able to capture those records and then supervise the content to make sure that it's not misleading to customers.
So what would be some of the red flags for a firm while they're supervising or looking through communications that their reps are having with their clients?
So sometimes it shows up in email reviews that you can tell from the emails that there's been previous conversations that may have taken place, perhaps through one of these mobile apps on the phone, chat or something like that, where that's alluded to in the emails, or it may just be, how's this relationship fully fledged and occurring without it being captured in the email system? So that's one way that firms have detected where their representatives are doing other things.
So they're seeing a rep who has all these emails from clients saying, I want to follow up on what we talked about on WhatsApp. That would
it
be
may
a red
be
flag.
That specific, or it might be a little less in your face about the name of the app, but it does come through the relationship. And then also situations where the reps are getting customers in other states and the email is not documenting any conversation with customers in other states. So how did that work out?
So I wanted to ask a little bit more about your group. So how is the AdReg group structured? You mentioned a little bit that each firm has an analyst. How does that work?
So we try to make sure that firms are matched up with folks with the right experience, but it's also just in terms of the workload, in terms of filings, we'll also have a play into that to make sure that the work is balanced and we're able to get it out in time.
And your group is under the Office of General Counsel, but each firm also has a rep in member supervision. So do you work closely with other groups around FINRA?
Yes. We know all the surveillance staff, both the regulatory coordinators and the directors, and there's a lot of conversation that goes on, particularly when there's new firms or perhaps unusual products that the firms might have. We want to make sure that we get the information that FINRA has before we bother the firm with a lot of questions they may have already answered for a colleague in another office.
So how big is your department?
So currently we have 35 staff, but we are looking to hire. We have a couple of openings, so we're excited about the opportunity to have some new folks join us.
So just looking broader than just the broker-dealer industry, do other industries have advertising regulations like this, and how do they compare to FINRA's rules?
So you mentioned earlier the ads for medical devices and also drugs, and they have a lot of disclosure, and the FDA does impose advertising standards that are very heavily disclosure-oriented. So there are other regulators that have a similar role. But in terms of the securities industry and the financial services industry, there really is no other department like ours that is looking at such a broad cross-section of the communications that are out there.
So at the end of the day, you mentioned advertising regulation is about investor protection and education. Some of the new developments you're seeing, are they encouraging in the sense that you see them helping contribute to the effort to educate and protect investors?
So I think that what I see in terms of firms really thinking about how to use their marketing, and you sometimes hear the term among marketing professionals about the investor journey. And I'm encouraged because a lot of firms bake into that investor education as part of it. And I think that that's an exciting development to see, and to see that there are educational tools that the firms are developing and that they're trying to put information out there so that investors can kind of do their own research and learn more about the products and services they offer. So I think that's an encouraging development.
But there's always going to be the need for this oversight. Not all firms are caring so much about the journey. Sometimes it's more about the bottom line.
I think the bottom line drives things largely. It is the financial services industry. They're not running a charity. So I think that that's always something that they have to contend with. And we see that play out in the communications that they file with us.
So how can compliance professionals stay up to date on some of the latest trends and issues that you guys are seeing?
So again, I think looking at our website, but there's also FINRA conferences and educational offerings that go on all year. There's the forums in the different regions. There's the FINRA annual conference, which there's both the on-site and then there's also a broadcast of it. If you can't take the time away from your job to travel, and there will be panels on communications with the public at the FINRA annual conference this year. And then our department sponsors a biannual conference that will take place again in 2021, and we'll post the dates shortly for that, but it will be in October in 2021. So save the date.
An opportunity to meet you in person.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, that's all the questions I had for this episode. Amy, thanks so much for joining us. From Rockville, Maryland, I'm your host, Caitlin Kiernan. If you have any ideas for future episodes, you can let us know at finraunscripted@finra.org. Till next time.
Please note, FINRA podcasts are the sole property of FINRA, and the information provided is for informational and educational purposes only. The content of the podcast does not constitute any FINRA rule or amendment or interpretation to such rules. Compliance with any recommended conduct presented does not mean that a firm or person has complied with the full extent of their obligations under FINRA rules, the rules of any other SRO, or securities laws. This podcast is provided as is. FINRA and its affiliates are not responsible for any human or mechanical errors or omissions. Parties may not reproduce these podcasts in any form without the express written consent of FINRA.